World Film Week of the Ashland Independent Film Festival runs through September 30th and includes 15 films from 13 countries. And most are screening online, but that's because of the pandemic. But that includes Daughter of the Lost Bird. This documentary follows a woman born to a Native American woman who was adopted into a white family as she searches for her birth mother and her full heritage. The film's director is Brooke Swaney, and she joins us this morning. Good morning, Brooke.
Good morning. Nice to be here, John.
Thank you. And Richard Herskowitz, the director of the Ashland Independent Film Festival, is with us as well. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning, John. Nice to be here, too.
And we're still waiting for Kendra Potter. Our assistant is trying to reach her right now. So, Richard, I understand that you are retiring this year as the artistic director of the festival. We're certainly going to miss you.
Oh, thanks a lot, John. Yeah, I've done six Ashland Independent Film Festivals. This is actually my seventh World Film Week. Yeah, I'm going to wrap it up and move back east. I'm going to stay connected to the festival, though, and I have a couple of programs I'll be presenting in April.
Well, it's good to hear that you're still involved. Brooke Swaney, the director of Daughter of a Lost Bird, let's start with you. The treatment of Native children has been on everyone's radar recently with the horrific disclosures coming out of Canada. But can you remind us of the issues surrounding Native children in the U.S., especially around adoption?
Yeah, sure. Regarding that question about, it isn't a question because there have been bodies found around missions and boarding schools in Canada, and certainly I'm sure that a similar discovery is going to happen here in the United States. And it's also anecdotally been something that, you know, most Indigenous communities have been talking about for a long time. But to your question about adoption, you know, in the 50s, there was this thing called the Indian Adoption Project that was started by the U.S. government to remove Native kids from their homes. And it was basically because, you know, part of the reason was to assimilate Native people, but also to get rid of tribes, you know, because tribes have resources, because we have land. And that sort of movement, you know, coupled with the boarding schools movement, you know, continued for decades up until 1978, when the Indian Child Welfare Act was made the law of the land, and actually is currently being challenged yet again in the Supreme Court.
So, did that 1978 Adoption Act actually change things?
Well, yes. So, you know, Native grassroots activists, and I explain in my film Daughter of a Lost Bird, that Native activists in the 70s, you know, were getting really tired and realizing, you know, at the time that, you know, this wasn't an isolated incident per community, that was happening across the United States. And so a lot of people rallied together, and I believe the Association of American Indian Affairs also did a quite extensive study at the time to document, you know, what was happening to our communities. And, you know, working with Congress, that's when they were able to write the act. Sorry, I'm not an expert on the act or this history, but I do know that, you know, it did start a wave of change, and less Native kids were adopted out then. Now, of course, you know, it's more about Native kids being overrepresented in foster care and that sort of thing. And people are still confused, I think, you know, about what the point of the act is. And a lot of people don't understand that, you know, Native people were not just, an ethnic or racial minority. We actually have, like, different political rights than other people in the country because of our ties to our tribes. And when we have that, you know, sovereign nation that we are also a part of, you know, that gives you a whole host of other things that you have access to, whether it's owning land on your own reservation, being able to participate in your, you know, traditional governing, you know, setup, or whether it's, you know, inheriting certain cultural rights. All of those are things that you miss if you aren't connected to your tribe.
We're talking with Brooke Sweeney. She's the director of the documentary film Daughter of a Lost Bird, which is screening virtually this week at the Ashland Independent Film Festival. Brooke, how did you come to the decision to tell Kendra's story? Is this your first documentary?
Yes. Well, this is my first feature documentary. And, you know, we were friends because I made a short film out of film school. I went to New York University for my graduate film degree. And I met Kendra, and we became friends. And I realized, you know, as I got to know her, that she didn't know what community she was from, and she wanted to know more. And as her friend, I kind of naively was like, well, let's just find out. And then somewhere along the way, she says it's me, I say it may be her. We decided to make this film together. But it's been like an 8-year journey. And, you know, I'm so grateful to have been a part of her life for all these years.
We had hoped to have Kendra with us this morning, but we're still not able to reach her. So, Brooke, I'm going to have to ask you to do some extra work here and carry Kendra's story and some of the questions I had intended to ask her. So can you tell us about her adoptive family and what they were like and how they treated her?
Well, so Kendra's parents are really amazing. Sandy Henderson and Larry Milnichek are, you know, Sandy's actually from Montana, which is where I'm also from, and Larry, they adopted Kendra when she was like 2 or 3 days old in Oregon, and she had a really like loving, you know, upper middle class family. You know, it wasn't a situation of abuse where, unfortunately, a lot of kids who are indigenous and adopted experience.
And so she had this, as you describe it, sort of loving American middle class upbringing. What did they tell Kendra about her origins, and how did as she tells it in the film, how did she feel when she heard about that?
Well, you know, she didn't know where she was from. I mean, they it's kind of like this really interesting game of telephone that we actually don't get into in the film, but because it's so complicated, you know, the way that the story morphed, they thought, you know, maybe she was from Alaska because her birth mother had mentioned, you know, maybe she thought something about Alaska in her own documentation when she was put up for adoption. You know, we had made a lot of assumptions about, you know, who and where she was from. Like she had thought for the longest time that she was also Italian, because, you know, they would just let people assume that she was Italian because of her skin color. And, you know, like that had turned out not to be true. But really they wanted to raise her a part of the family, and they didn't know, you know, which community she was from at all, because Kendra's birth mother was also adopted.
So there wasn't really much of a paper trail to work with there. So,
well, I mean, there was like several paper trails, because we learned later Kendra's birth mother, April, had something like 3 different birth certificates. So it was complicated to figure out, you know, who she was. And it wasn't until basically when we started filming, April had submitted, you know, some health information to the adoption agency where Kendra came from. And through that information, Kendra learned that she was Lummi. And so that, you know, that's definitely not Alaska by any means.
Right, yeah.
It's actually a little bit closer to home than, you know, what she thought.
So the closed adoption system has been slowly opening up in recent decades, but privacy laws can still make it a challenge when an adoptee wants to find their birth parents, what were the particular obstacles that Kendra faced once she began her search, in addition to the ones you already talked about with the sort of imprecision about, you know, where she was from and all these different birth certificates?
Well, I think it's kind of interesting because for both Kendra and April, you know, things weren't that difficult for them, you know, because Kendra and April went through Boys and Girls Aid of Oregon, they had it set up so that both parties had to agree to want to meet the other person, and you just had to submit paperwork to do that. And, you know, it wasn't that expensive to, you know, submit the paperwork. It was just more about, you know, timing when the other person would also submit. And then regarding April's story, you know, she wasn't searching for her adoptive or her birth parents. She actually received like a letter and a phone call from them because they were searching for her. They had hired a private detective to try to, you know, find her.
We're talking with Brooke Swaney. She's the director of Daughter of a Lost Bird, which is a documentary film screening this week virtually by the Ashland Independent Film Festival. Richard Herskowitz, the artistic director of the festival, what attracted you to this film to make it part of the festival this fall?
Several things. You know, I saw the film in the Human Rights Watch Film Festival, and that's what I do throughout the year. I attend other festivals. This last year has been easier because so many of these festivals have been virtual and they've been coming to me. This one just knocked me out. I know that, you know, Brooke has made narrative films before this, but she's an excellent documentary director. Also, I try to get a wide range of countries and cultures represented in World Film Weeks, and this was a film about Native Americans in the U.S. And finally, the Oregon connection. You know, Kendra grew up, I mean, her birth mother lives in the Portland area, and she has background here, and that also spoke to me. So that one got in pretty early into this program.
So, Brooke Swaney, go ahead.
Oh, I was just, you know, thank you. We're so honored to be presenting the film to Oregon audiences. So thank you, Richard.
So, yeah. Brooke, you obviously were a constant part of the process. You know, how did you balance your relationship with Kendra with being a documentarian? I mean, were there times when you had to say, "Whoa, I need some objectivity here. Need to back off," or how did you handle that?
Well, it made it more complicated because Kendra's also a producer on the film, which, you know, with documentary people often, I mean, a lot of funders, you know, often kind of balked at that decision. But we were so entangled, you know, as far as our relationship as friends and the way that we saw the project, that it really didn't make sense not to have her also be involved behind the camera. And so it sometimes, you know, sometimes made complications, and, you know, I had to like be like, well, Kendra, you know, Kendra gives us, you know, notes on the edit, but she's also not like, she doesn't have final cut in the film and things like that, which is true. You know, like it was mainly my editor, Kristen Swanbeck, and I, like, you know, tinkering away up to the last minute with the film and trying to get it locked and delivered for our major funder, Vision Maker Media.
So this story kind of hits home in my family because my sister was adopted and she successfully found her birth parents. And I can say from our entire family's point of view that the reunion went really, really well, and it just sort of increased the size of our family, and it's been a wonderful experience. But another member of my family didn't have such a great experience finding a birth parent, and the reunion did not go well. Can you relate Kendra's emotions about how she approached the meeting with her birth mother? And because that's full of all sorts of anticipation, but also the promise of rejection as well. That must be a very, very difficult situation.
Yeah. Well, there was a lot of fear for her. The unknown is really scary sometimes, and it takes a lot of courage to decide to, go out of your comfort zone, which I think has been mostly what this film is about, is, confronting the unknown and going out of your comfort zone. I mean, Kendra very much, certainly the moment before she met her birth mother in person, you can watch in the film, she's like, I'm going to puke. she kept kind of like, it was like her mantra of like not puking. But it was also like coupled with this fascination of like wanting to know who this person is. And, she wanted to reach out to her, I think, when she was 18. And her parents were like, maybe you're too young to do that. I would argue, that I think she probably could have handled meeting her at that time, and that April might have been available too. But that's not what happened. And instead, it wasn't until she was in her 30s that she met her birth mother. And, everything happens for a reason, I believe. So I think it all has been working out the way it's supposed to.
Brooke Sweeney is the director of Daughter of a Lost Bird, screening virtually this week at the Ashland Independent Film Festival. You can join the conversation this morning on The Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, or shoot us an email at jx@jeffnet.org. So, Brooke, there's the whole aspect of the interpersonal aspect of meeting your birth parents. But then on top of that, there is the process for Kendra of connecting with her original culture. And you yourself are Native American. Can you tell us about how that worked for Kendra? And for the both of you, how she reconnected with her culture?
Mm-hmm. It's a process like any sort of relationship building. As Indigenous people, we're so relational. It's about the relationship that we have to one another that's really like, the prime importance. I mean, when you meet somebody from another community, you're always kind of like, well, do I know somebody who knows you? is the situation. And so, there's this whole huge generation of Indigenous kids that, were just like kind of cut off at the knees about being able to like reconnect, with their family. And I think, in a lot of ways, Kendra and her birth mother, April, are very fortunate because, their family has been very open to, reestablishing those tribes. Not all families, are that excited. I mean, not that, you wouldn't be excited, but, adoption can be really complicated, I'm sure, as you are aware, John, with your own family history regarding adoption and reconnection. And so it's a similar thing of, well, is this person who's coming back into the community, kind of what is their motive here? Like, I mean, a lot of Indigenous people have had a lot of mistrust, certainly as like one of the elders in our film talks about how so much has been taken from our communities. And so, even when it's somebody who's been gone for so long to return, it can be really difficult. We took the name Daughter of a Lost Bird from Lost Bird, who was a Lakota woman, and she was found as a baby by the general at Wounded Knee, who, later raised her and also abused her. And she went back to her community and had a really hard time reintegrating and unfortunately, committed suicide when she was in her, I think she was in her late 20s or something like that, because she was never able to, really reintegrate, in that world. You know, she was too white to be indigenous and too indigenous to be a part of the white community. And I think where, you know, April and Kendra have had success is that, I mean, like, success is a weird word to say about this, but where they have had that success of reestablishing ties is with their welcoming family members. And I would say, you know, a lot of Coast Salish people, I kind of see that, you know, you want to learn about us, you want to learn our songs, like, you know, you want to come to our gatherings. I mean, it's like the welcoming spirit, you know, of the communities up there is pretty amazing to witness.
And one final question for you, Brooke Sweeney. Does this come out in the documentary as well? Another challenge that adoptees have is just knowing about not just their culture and who their family originally was, but also health issues. I mean, this has a real serious impact on a lot of people.
Sure. Yeah, so also a part of when Kendra learned about her, about which tribe she was from, it was basically submitted through a form about health information. And now we don't really go that deep into health information in the film. I do understand it is a lot of what, you know, adoptees want to know because, you know, when you go to the doctor and, like, they ask you for your family history and you don't have that, it can be a little bit, you know, you're just missing a piece of your overall puzzle as a human. So I think, you know, the fact that Kendra now has at least her birth mother's information, I feel like she's more equipped to make, you know, certain decisions about her health.
We're running out of time, and Richard Herskowitz, I want to bring you back in here so you can tell people how they can screen Brooke Sweeney's film, Daughter of a Lost Bird.
Yes, the film premieres this Thursday, the 23rd. Just go to ashlandfilm.org. It's available for 24 hours, and you can watch it online on your computer or connect via Apple TV or Roku TV to your big screen. And again, it's going to return then next week from the 28th, 29th, and 30th for 72 hours.
Richard Herskowitz and Brooke Sweeney, thank you so much for being with us on the Jefferson Exchange.